Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 295, recorded May 23rd, 2016.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello. Ta-da! Here we are.
Back again. 295. We're so close to 300. So who's on the list for today?
Well, we have Mick in the one and only Carnforth, UK. In fact, we have two from Mick, so we'll hear from Mick twice this evening. Matt in Perth, and I'm guessing it's Western Australia,
although it is indeed
you didn't write that down.
I figured you knew this time, so you could say it.
We know who you are, Matt. Devin in Portland, Oregon. Bill in San Antonio, Texas. And then, like I already said, the other one from Mick. Is Bill new?
I think so.
Okay, yeah. Well, welcome, Bill.
And I'm pretty sure Devin has contributed before.
San Antonio is a spiffy town. I've never been there, but
I've
know
there.
People who haven't. They all like it.
I like it.
You had siblings, a sibling and
who
family
lived
who lived there for a little while. They liked it.
I visited the Alamo there.
Did you?
Yeah.
You know, there's no basement in the Alamo.
It's just one of those things
you have to experience. They don't teach you that in school. Especially if your bike gets stolen.
It's true.
That was kind of an obscure reference.
Okay. Let's start out then with Mick in Carnforth.
Yes. He says, "Hi guys, a pair of my black marble angels spawned again in my display tank in the living room. I thought that the hoplos and other fish would have made tasty work of the eggs, but last night I spotted wrigglers. I decided to trim off the Java fern leaf they had conveniently used and put it in one of my old show tanks, which also serve as a useful mini hatchery. I use a small air stone and a piece of the polyfilter as a filter. It holds around 5 liters and makes a nice small area for the first week or two to corral them in, and they feed much better in a small space. Daily small water changes using an air line with floss over the end to tidy up any debris or uneaten food works a treat. Once they get really going in a few weeks, I will transfer them to one of my 10-liter Matten filter tanks. I have just moved the goldfish fry out of one of these smaller grow-on tanks, which is convenient timing. They are just starting to develop some coloration, which is very exciting." Oh, there we go. I have attached a couple of pictures and a link to a YouTube video, and we will put those up, and you can see the little teensy baby things.
Yep, it's fun to see the angel fry. I, as a kid, had angel fry that would spawn fairly frequently, but I never actually got to fry. They ate the eggs and things like that. So, something I'd like to do sometimes. I think that's on my list. My bucket list of fishy things to do
is
spawn
angelfish. Maybe you should call it your tank
list. Maybe I should.
Because it's tanks to have before you kick the bucket.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so we will put that up so everybody can check them out.
Okay. And this is from...
Matt.
Oh, and Matt is speaking some Italian in the beginning. He says, "Buongiorno, Aquarimax. Did I ever tell you I learned Italian when I was younger? Well, I can remember about 40 words now in Italian, most of which are not useful, like, how old are you, or my name is Matthew. I also suffer from the inability of saying a foreign language without putting the appropriate accent on it. Which means everything I know Italian must have a sing-song element to it with much passion and arm waving." That's okay, it's more fun!
Più divertente così, dai.
Non si può parlare italiano senza usare le mani.
Sì.
Okay. I bring up Italian as I learnt it when I was very young, just like I started on aquariums when I was very young. I'm going to reflect on my fishy past. We need like a doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo music track to be like the swishy film that means you're having a flashback.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. Imagine
like,
a swishy
I like the
film.
Sound effect. Okay. That's pretty cool.
We're very high tech on our sound effects. When I was 8, I got a 2.5 foot by 1 by 1 foot aquarium as a gift from my parents. I already had mice, birds, rabbits, 2 dogs, and a cat. Almost sounds like our house. We don't have rabbits, though. We've never had rabbits since we've been married.
No, I did when I was a kid, though.
And everything else. You might say I liked animals. Even today, I could get away with it. If I could get away with it, I would have my entire backyard converted into one giant rainforest-like aviary with many macaws and other colorful parrots. I would also have a 5,000-liter, 5x1x1-meter massive reef, too, and a big pond full of koi. One can dream.
You gotta make the size pleasantly.
Oh, yes, he says size pleasantly.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me, something like that. I wouldn't mind that.
I know. Well, when we first got married, we had this plan. We would draw it all out of how we were going to make a kind giant of a greenhouse room in our house. Room. With lizards running around free range. And
yeah. Who knows? Maybe yeah, someday
it's now I don't want to clean it.
No, we'll have it set up like a live vivarium so it'll clean itself. See?
Hmm. Okay, Matt says, this is going to be one long email, but I could not help myself. Please forgive my loquaciousness. You get the spiffy word of the email. The word.
Okay.
Loquaciousness. That's a good word. I can't remember what fish I put in my first aquarium. I know I astonished all visitors to our house and that the fish survived. I had a knack for not overfeeding, whereas visitors were used to accidentally killing their goldfish within weeks of owning them. My mom also loves things that grow, and my dad studied to be a vet, although he did not finish that degree. So we all love animals. That makes it so much easier when you are a kid who loves animals, if you have parents who appreciate that. So good job to your parents. My aquarium collection grew, and at its peak, I had a 4x2x2 foot, a 6x2x2 foot, and a 4 foot by 14 inches by 18 inches, a 3 foot by 18 inches by 18 inches, and the original 2.5x1x1 foot aquarium. That is a total volume of 1,330 liters, or 350 gallons of water. 6 foot had variety of 20 centimeters plus big South American cichlids in it. The 4x2x2 foot had Riff Lake cichlids in it. The 4x14x18 was a planted aquarium, and the 3 foot served to raise the fry we bred. The 6 foot aquarium cichlids bred ever so often, and I would siphon off the fry into a bucket and then transfer them into the 3 foot. The Riff Lake cichlids would also breed frequently, and I often needed to raise them in the 3 foot aquarium. Clearly, I had an addiction, and I needed help. We slowly reduced the tank numbers, much to my disgust, as I grew up. However, I never lost that passion for fish, and if it ever becomes financially possible, I intend to go big again. Speaking of which, I have finally started converting the 650-liter 6x2x2 into a marine aquarium. Step one is to fix the hood. Currently, it gets infected by mold and drips down the side of the tank. I am getting mold in my 4x14x18-inch hood, too. Do you have any idea how to stop mold from growing on wood? Once I've figured out how to fix that, then I'm going to fix one of the cabinet doors that keeps coming off its hinge. Hmm. Should we stop and talk about mold?
Well, maybe we should.
Let's move this a little bit. You know, I haven't ever built wooden hoods like that, but...
Have you always had plastic ones?
I have read articles, yeah, I think so. But I haven't read... I mean, I have read articles on how to use marine-grade epoxy paint on wooden things like that when you're using them for tanks. And I wonder if that would help. I bet it would.
Yeah, it seems like there's got to be some kind of critter-safe sealant if it's marine epoxy or whatever, yeah. So that it's kind of waterproofed.
It's toxic at the time when you're painting it, of course, but I think after
it's... You'd have to leave it off for a while.
And you probably wanted to do a little bit more research on that, but it's something at least to look into.
Mm-hmm. That would be good. Whoa, the tablet just...
It's a goofy thing.
Okay, freaked out.
There we go.
Okay. These superficial changes are necessary before I can start the big work. There's a giant foam backing on the back of the 6 foot that I need to remove. That is going to be a whole weekend's worth of hacking away, I reckon. Then I need to get in the fish maintenance experts to drill my tank and install my sump. I want to involve aquarium maintenance professionals, as I know they will save me a lot of money and time and know what works and what I can and cannot add to the setup. They can also help advise me on the plants in the aquarium. I think that's probably a good idea. If you have a tank that big and you're going to do marine, it makes sense to
call in the
get
professionals.
Some help, yeah. The step after that is replacing the sand with new coralline sand to keep the pH up. Then the fish maintenance guys fill up the aquarium with 650 liters of salt water. Also a good idea, because really, who wants to mix that much salt water all on their own? Here is where the brilliant part kicks in. I already have cured dead rock in my 180-liter marine. That means if I buy some more dead rock for the 6 foot, I do not need to cure it. I can literally add the fish, corals, old rock, sand, and new rock on day one.
Mm, that is always nice when you can do that.
That is a big deal, as I was not looking forward to waiting a whole month for new live rock to cure. In case anyone in podcast land has forgotten, live rock comes from the ocean, and a lot of creatures on it die when you buy it. This causes a spike in ammonia, nitrites, and nitrates. But I won't have the Zig problem. Exciting! After... That is a
frustrating part of the system when you're doing that. Yeah, because it's basically... It is cycling a tank. It's just you're using the live rock organisms to do it. So, yeah, it is frustrating.
After I have added the contents of the 3-foot aquarium into the 6-foot aquarium, I can attach the lights. Now, this is the expensive part, but not too expensive. I have decided to go with Aqua Illuminations 26 HD lights. I will need 3 lights, as each covers an area of 2 square feet. At a cost of $500 each, that was my ouch noise. They will not be cheap, however, I think they are worth it. First of all, Kelly will appreciate this. They are pretty. Yay! Because if you have ugly lights, what is the point of spending that much money? Right? That was me. That wasn't Matt. That was my own comment. This is Matt. Back to Matt. The point of a reef display tank is to look stunning, so that is a big thumbs up. I have attached images of my light in the white edition, looking from the top and the bottom, plus an image that shows how they are elegantly mounted onto tank cabinets. Much nicer looking than a 6-foot long fluorescent light, for example. Amen. Side note, I was watching the 2016 BBC documentary David Attenborough's Great Barrier Reef on Blu-ray. I own it, naturally. And he goes to Australian Institute of Marine Science, a big coral research facility in Queensland. These guys are the best. So, what lighting fixture do these cream-of-the-crop ultimate professionals have? You guessed it, Aqua Illumination 52 HDs. The 52 HDs are the model up from my 26 HDs, just more powerful, but basically the same technology. It was when I saw that on the Blu-ray that I knew I had made the right lighting decision. I'm not sure if they will be visible above the cabinet hood, but if they are, they will look good, and if they are not, they will look good when I go to feed them. I have a 3-sided cabinet hood. That means there is wood on the front and the 2 sides. There is no wood on the top or the back of the unit, which allows for maximum ventilation, but also, luckily, will mean I can mount these lights without the hood getting in the way. The 26 HD lights are Wi-Fi controllable. That's fancy. You can get them to all sync up and act as one single unit. I will be able to have moonlighting, so even when the fish are asleep, they will be visible with the low lighting settings these fancy lights do. Great for dinner parties when sometimes the fishy bedtimes are too early and guest wants to still view them. That's a good idea. Yeah. I can set them to fade up in the morning to simulate a sunrise and fade down to simulate sunset in the evening. Best of all, I can control the individual color channels. So let's take red and blue, for example. Let's say I put the red at 75%, but save 25% of the red's power output. I can then add that power output to the blue channel. That's right, I can output 125% power to the blue channel. This means ultimate control, efficiency, and flexibility. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Ha 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 ha. And he says, grins delightedly and runs around in celebration. Woohoo, 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 woohoo. I'm going to buy a Max Spec Gyre. It's G-Y-R-E.
I don't know the brand.
XF-150. It sounds kind of like a pickup truck, but I bet it's not.
It's not.
Which can generate an insane amount of flow. Gyre is the big new technology in current generation, as it generates a wall of water flow, not just a tunnel of flow like normal power heads do. The best bit is it can go in reverse, so I can keep the corals guessing and give them the erratic flow they so desire.
That is cool.
Yes. Now, I am not going to get a protein skimmer, and here's why. I want to do natural filtration. As Tony from New York said, protein skimmers only remove about 25% of the waste from the aquarium water. By the way, Tony, contribute again. We miss your chirpy, jubilant emails. And plus... I'm going to say that, too. We haven't heard from Tony in a long time. You should write
it's
in
true.
Again.
It's true. It's been a while.
We miss you. Matt says, side note, jubilant has got to be one of the most enjoyable words to say. Jubilant! It makes me jubilant saying jubilant.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Jubilant?
Yeah.
That's how I say it.
Okay.
How do you say it?
I say jubilant. But that's okay.
I say coupon, too, and you say coupon.
Do I? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Okay, but I do love the word.
Probably because I'm from California.
I do love the word.
I love that word, too. It is a happy word, because it makes you want to prance and jump about in the grass with bare feet.
Yep.
Right? Does. Yes, it does. Okay. So you have 2 good words in your email today, Matt. So I will have mechanical filtration in the form of bioballs to smash up all the nutrients into tiny particles in the first part of the sump. The main part of the sump will be a deep sand bed refugium, perhaps with miracle mud, and large clump of the macroalgae Keto?
Cheeto? Different people pronounce it different ways, keto or I Cheeto.
Probably shouldn't say Cheeto because then you got to eat those little weird cheese puff things.
Yeah, but some people say keto and some people say Cheeto.
The bacteria and the sand and the keto should be using up the nutrients so fast that there will be very little of it left when the water goes back up into the display aquarium.
Cool.
There will be a freshwater reservoir in the sump and a simple auto top-off system to keep the osmolality constant. Did I say that one right? That's your third word, so I don't even know that word. I'm guessing it has to do with osmolarity, osmosis. But, he doesn't type an O, an R.
That's right. But
Yeah. That stuff. Eventually, I will add a heater chiller to it, but as it is winter right now, the chiller part is not needed just yet. How cold does it get where you're at, Matt? I'm just curious. In Perth, how cold does it get in Perth in the wintertime?
I think you told us a long time ago.
He probably did, but my brain is a pasta drainer, and it fell out of one of those little holes. So feel free to tell me again. Some things, big things, they don't fit through the holes. Like, I know who you are.
That's good.
Huh? That's a big thing.
Glad you still remember that one.
Little things, they don't get kept.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. I also intended to buy a dosing pump and some additives to keep the water quality pristine for maximum coral growth. I still do not have a firm date for all of this to happen, but rest assured I will begin work on the cabinet hood this weekend. I estimate a maximum of 3 months before this is all up and running, probably less. The thrill of setting up a new system and such an ambitious system makes life worth living. It gives me a deep sense of purpose and satisfaction even when things go wrong. Nothing worth doing is easy. That's true. Except ice cream. If any of the Aquarimaxers have any advice on setting up such a large reef tank, please let me know. Also, Russ, tell me about your first aquarium. What do you remember about it? What do other Aquarimaxers remember about their first tanks? To infinity and beyond, Matt.
I like the retrospective idea. That's cool.
Yes, let's go talk about nostalgic stuff.
Okay. Well, let's see. The first tank I ever had was a goldfish bowl. I think it was about half a gallon goldfish bowl.
How old were you?
I was four.
So I remember your parents went and got it?
Yes. And there were three goldfish, unfortunately, in that little thing. One for me, one for my sister, and one
because
for my
brother.
Because
your parents didn't have the Aquarimax resource, that's all.
No, they didn't know. And so it was a short-lived aquarium. Later, I got an aquarium for my hamster to live in.
And then, was the goldfish one, was that Peter?
That was Peter, yeah, the shoebunkin.
That was your first goldfish name was Peter.
Yeah, I remember him very well. I was very excited to get Peter, but they didn't last very long, only a few months, which was kind of amazing they survived that long. Then, after my hamster passed away, I must have been about 7.5 or 8 years old, something like that, we used the tank that he lived in and turned it into a goldfish tank. I think it was either 5 or 10 gallons, I'm not sure, I don't remember the size exactly, but we had that for a few years, and the goldfish did quite a bit better, survived longer. When we moved, though, I believe, and I do not advocate this, but I believe we released the remaining goldfish in the lake that was near our house.
Whoops.
Not a good idea, and I wouldn't do it again, but that's what we did at the time.
And you didn't inhale, and you never did it again.
Right. Then we moved to a different state, and not long after that, I got my own tank. This is really my first tank, because this was mine. My fish, I picked the fish, I set up the tank, I read up on how to do it and everything. I had a little box filter in the corner, no illumination or lid on the tank, except for there was track lighting in the ceiling above the tank, so it did get some illumination, but no actual hood on the tank of any kind. A 10-gallon tank, box filter in the corner, a bunch of anacharis plants, threw those in there. They actually did pretty well, wasn't too far away from the window. And I started out with some guppies, some platies, two pygmy corydoras catfish, a red-tailed black shark, a black molly, and two marble black angelfish. Way too many fish for a 10-gallon tank. But by some miracle, probably in part because of all the plants in there, They did all right for quite a while until one of my younger sisters decided to feed them. And she dumped like half a container of fish food, maybe the whole container of fish food, something like that, in there. And that was the end of that. I wasn't equipped to deal with it. I didn't know exactly what to do. I tried to net out as much fish food as I could and, you know, did How whatever I could at then? The time. I was 11, maybe?
11?
Yeah, around 11. Maybe a 10, something like that. Anyway, it didn't last very long after that. Despite my best efforts to correct the situation. Then, my first, what I would consider maybe a successful tank that lasted a long time was, it was a couple years later than that, I think I was around 13, and got a tank with an undergravel filter in it, and with a light hood and everything, like the full setup. I talked to the guys there at the pet store about cycling the tank, and did that. I actually put some aquatic isopods in there to help cycle the tank. They did well. They were breeding in there before I ever put fish in there. Completely aquatic isopods I found in a ditch near my house, which was kind of fun. But once I got those going, I was trying to explain to the guy when I was buying my first fish. He was saying, well, have you had things living in the tank? And I said, I have some snails in there, because I had some snails too, and some scavengers. And I was trying to explain to him aquatic isopods, and I don't think he got what I was saying. But anyway, then I got two Mickey Mouse pleties. And then later on, I picked up some guppy fry at the pet store that had just been born. And I raised those guppies up in that tank, and they ended up having babies. And I had the descendants of those guppies for the next 25 years, 26 years, something like that.
You kept that strain a long time.
A long time. So
we still had it for quite a few years after we got married.
Oh, yes, a long time. So that was my first tank that was successful, and I had a lot of different fish go in and out of that tank and move things around and got other tanks. So once I got that tank, I started branching out, and pretty soon I had, you know, four or five tanks. And until we got married, I had at least three, I think. And then once we got married, I still had some at my parents' house that I would periodically go over and take care of. But it wasn't until we moved to, we moved to that house on 400 North that we started spreading out and getting more tanks. Mm-hmm. Because before that, we weren't really allowed to have tanks.
Yeah, we did anyways.
Well, actually, in Springville, we had a few tanks.
It's like, it's way too late for anybody to prosecute us for having pets in the apartment we weren't supposed to have pets in, right? Is the statute of limitations passed? Can I tell them what we had when we weren't supposed
to? The damage is done now, so.
So there was nothing allowed, so what all did we have? We had sea monkeys and anoles and hermit crabs and sugar gliders and an iguana.
And probably
we didn't have the iguana for very long, though.
No,
we ended up not being able to keep the iguana,
right?
Which was sad.
Right, but we had quite a few
creatures. In a one-bedroom apartment that we weren't allowed to have pets in.
Yeah. But
we were so naughty.
But we got better, because later when we moved to Hawaii and we were only allowed to have fish and birds, we had a bird and fish.
Well, yeah, because if you say, okay, this is what you're allowed to have, great, that's reasonable, you know, we can keep it to that. If you say nothing, that's unreasonable, so why should we listen to it at all?
Yeah, and anyway.
I'm just naughty.
Yeah, but that was my first experience with a tank, and I had all kinds of creatures in that tank, and I think I still had that tank for many, many years thereafter. And I actually have one of the tanks, or two of the tanks that I had, no, just one of the tanks, I think, that I had as a kid. I still use it. Still got fish.
Which one
in
is it?
It's the one with the gold barbs in there.
The golden horn.
And the bitta. Yep. I had that tank when I was like 14 or 15.
It hasn't broken yet.
Yep.
Knock on wood.
And the stand was that same stand and everything. So, yeah, I've got some. I think that's the only tank I still have from back then. But, that was the one, the permanent tank that actually succeeded. And I had generations after generation of happy fish in it. So, there you go.
It's pretty cool. Well, if anybody else wants to write in with their early fish keeping memories, that could be fun. In the meantime, we can go to Devin in Portland, Oregon.
Yep.
And he says, "Hi, Russ and Kelly. I've been recently struggling with my undergravel filter with my fire eel. He burrows in the substrate, and I'm always worried I'm going to hurt him with the gravel vac I use. I was wondering if there was a good solution to this, or a different filtration system I should look at. I've heard grumblings about undergravels generally, and I'm starting to worry that it's a subpar option."
Well, undergravel filters in general can be good if they're treated correctly, but I would say that in your situation with a fire eel, it probably isn't a great option, and I would look into a hang-on-the-back filter.
So what exactly is a fire eel?
A fire eel, it's an eel-like fish that, it spends a lot of time burying itself in the gravel.
It makes explosions in the tank?
No.
It's red? Why do they call it a fire eel?
It doesn't make explosions in the tank here.
It's not like a mad scientist eel?
No, not particularly.
Well, drat.
But I can pull up a picture for you. You remember that I'm colorblind, and so if you ask me if it's red, I don't know that I can tell you.
But why do they call it a fire eel?
That is anybody's guess. I'm sure somebody knows that's not me. I don't know why they call them that.
But they apparently like to burrow.
They do like to burrow, and I have—I was aware of that. I have never kept a fire eel before. There you go.
They have That's reddish stripes.
Okay, well, there you go. That must be why.
At least in that picture.
People often forget I'm colorblind, but I don't mind. Okay, now.
I should tickle you. You're so naughty.
Okay. Anyway, I would say that it would probably be a better to go with a hang-on-the-back filter, something that allows for a good colony of beneficial bacteria to be propagated, like a bio-wheel filter. Not that that's the only one, but I like those. I use them. Something like that, and probably change your substrate for something of a finer grain. Make sure it's not something sharp, because if you get a sharp sand, that's not going to be good for them, but a nice fine sand with fairly round particles.
Marshmallows?
No, that's too coarse and too soggy.
Marshmallows aren't coarse. He's a fire eel. He could toast his own s'mores.
But in terms of grain size, marshmallows are way too big.
No, so, they're soft and
I would
fluffy.
Recommend sand, not marshmallows.
Okay, but how is the poor little fire eel going to make any s'mores?
That will have to be a question for another time, I'm afraid. But I would say, think about that. Look into, because it is important to make sure you get a sand that's not going to be sharp. Like some of the sands out there, like the Tahitian moon sand, I love the look of it. But the particles are rather sharp. And anything that's going to be diving into it, like a fire eel, probably not the best option. So something else. I know some people use pool filter sand. Doing a little research on that might be a good idea. I wouldn't just go out and buy some without checking into it first, but that could be an option too.
Okay, should we go to Bill in San Antonio?
Yes.
He says, "Here's my aquarium question. I have always used hang-on-the-back filters with wet, dry media. The Baileys were big on this type of biofilter. I am thinking of purchasing a 125-gallon tank for a Nimbuna colony. Not sure that hang-on-the-backs on the market can keep up with the bio load this tank will most likely produce. Any filtration suggestions other than canister? Not a fan of a closed system for the 125-gallon.
Well, there's a couple of ideas there. The BioWheel people do make a large... I'm trying to remember what the name of the system is called. But they have a really big setup that goes under your tank. And it's basically... It comes with a sump. So it's a bio-wheel filter, but it's huge, and it's set up to be part of a sump. And the bio-wheel itself looks different from the ones that you have on other setups. And I would say something like that might be a good option for that case. Because you don't have to worry about it taking up the space behind the tank. You know, it's under the tank, which is good, because otherwise it wouldn't really fit behind the tank. And it's not a closed system. It's got the aerobic bio wheel going on. So kind of larger capacity, but still with the same ability to house large numbers of beneficial bacteria. So I would say if you can look into that. I was thinking it might be called BioWheel Pro, but I'm not sure that it is called that. Maybe have to It's not.
You find it, you can put the link up on the Facebook page.
It might be a BioWheel Pro system, but yeah, anyway. I don't think that's it. I'll see if I can find it and put it up on the page like you suggest.
Okay.
Because it is, I think, an option that might work for you. There's another one. It's called the HOT Magnum Pro System Canister Filter, if you can find one. And it is kind of like a hang-on-the-back filter. It is one, but it's almost like a cross between a canister filter and a hang-on-the-back filter, basically. And that might be an option, too. But I think the other one might be even better for you, the one I already mentioned.
Okie dokie. Shall we go to Mick's second email?
Yeah.
Okay. And Mick gets the Alliteration of the Week award. Count these, ladies and gentlemen. Big, beefy bumper broadcast bounces back, bursting with brilliant news.
What about brilliant bits?
Oh, bits.
I don't know if that
bits
works
of news.
In this case.
I don't know.
Brilliant bits of... I don't know.
He says, sorry, round of B words. I think that was kind of a lot of B words.
It was. That was great.
4, 6...
Plus, it was right after Bill.
So, good job, Mike. He says, superb show last week. New contributors in multiple continents. My teleocycla seemed to be settling in better now. I lost one of the five, so I'm left with 3 males and 1 female. All seem to be getting along well with each other, which is great. I upped the flow a little, and that seems to have made them feel more at home. This is one of the great advantages, excuse me, guys, of the power heads behind the mat filters having a flow adjuster on them. Makes them nice and slow for small tanks, and they have the power to make waves and larger ones when needed. The goldfish fry have now been moved into yet another larger tank for growing out, and are starting to get a little color on them. I have attached a picture of one of them. Oh, look at the baby goldfish!
Can you see the color?
Yeah, he's got like orange on his head.
There's a little bit of color showing up.
Mm-hmm. We'll put that up for you guys.
These are teleocyclas, so you get an idea of what they are. These elongated cichlids.
Oh, okay. My angel fry have nearly used up their egg sacs now and are just at the point where they should start to become free swimming in the next day or so. Looks like I have around 100 of them, so I might have to take them to the shop and grow some on upstairs in a large tank if they all do well.
Yeah, I'd love to see some of that.
The filter media I recommend is the Arcadia Polyfilter.
Okay, this is in specific response to Tom in Provo, wondering how to get rid of the film that was showing up,
the greasy film on
the surface
of the
water. Yep.
Right, okay.
So Arcadia Polyfilter.
ARCADIA.
Okay.
And he included a link to the page for it, so we'll put that up on the Facebook page, and you can probably just email it straight to Tom so we can make sure to get it. I use it in all my aquariums as it makes a big difference when feeding heavy on dry foods or takes excess organics out when using a lot of frozen or live foods. I tend to feed dry in the mornings and frozen or live in the evenings, excepting fry. It can be more expensive than traditional carbon, but it is much more effective and long-lasting. A 3-inch square will last me at least a couple of months in my 75-liter header tank. Even used inside aquarium filter, 4 to 6 weeks on small pieces seems average. As it also locks up ammonia, heavy metals, chlorine, etc., it is certainly a good product. It can be just as useful in fresh, brackish, or marine waters. Best fishes, Mick.
Thanks for getting back to us on that. That's good information for Tom. Hopefully it will help him out as he takes care of his tank that he has to restore. So I think, are we about it?
I think that's everybody.
I think that's about it. I have a new video coming out really soon. I've been trying to put out more. The one that is coming out very soon is one on infusoria. I had some fun over the past couple of weeks raising, a jar of infusoria, culturing one, and putting it under the microscope at different stages. So that was fun. So by the time this podcast comes out, it'll only be a day or two after that the video will come out. Or maybe what I'll do is I'll put it on the Facebook page unlisted so that you can check it out because you've heard this and you could watch it early if you want. And then it'll come out to the general public on Friday. Anyway, a lot of fun to watch the different little infusorians develop under the microscope gradually, and I tried to show that development in a few stages on the video. So I had looked at infusoria cultures before, but never at different stages, when I had grown them, so it was just fun to see. So maybe you could enjoy checking that out. And I think that's about all.
I think so.
So until next time, ladies and gentlemen,
may the fish
be with you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.